devotees, the subject of the discourse today is how one should maintain the mind undisturbed, silent, thereby giving an opportunity for the wisdom to dawn. In Buddhist philosophy, there is no special instructions given as to how one should keep the mind silent. But it is accepted that thoughts promote the development of desire in one. Thoughts that enable you to experience an object through a sense base are spontaneous creations which one cannot stop. When an object catches the sense base, then the natural reaction in the mind is to create a thought to experience that object. That occurs instantaneously. It is a spontaneous activity of the consciousness. One cannot check that activity unless of course you decide to create a situation where you will be away from such disturbances. Such thoughts are harmless because they just give you an opportunity to experience something through a sense base. The harmfulness in receiving such objects is to create a situation where you go on thinking about that object subsequently to the experience you received. Thoughts are unnecessarily created about that object, and naturally they fall into two categories. One promoting to create a desire or attachment, and the other promoting to create an aversion because that object did not create any liking in you. In the creation of a thought spontaneously, the five mental factors, namely contact, feeling, perception, volition and attention, play their part as productions by the consciousness. And it is after those five mental factors occur instantaneously, so to say, that a thought is created. There is no opportunity for the mind to pursue anything good or bad in the creation of that thought. But mental factor feeling gives you the opportunity or impression that the object that has caught the sense base is something which you would like or not like. But there is no opportunity at that time in the creation of the thought to experience the sense-based activity to pursue either the like or the dislike. Subsequently, after you experience the sense-based activity or the object, then you get the opportunity of thinking about it. You create thoughts. If the object is to your liking, you pursue that liking by enjoying it by creating more and more thoughts. And thereby you create an attachment. If the object is not to your liking, you create more and more thoughts of dislike. Why? Because you expected something to your liking. And as it did not occur, you create thoughts of dislike. And that creates the aversion. It is this attachment and aversion that creates the desire, that feeds the desire, that maintains the desire. Invariably, you are now used to a pattern of existence where you spontaneously create a thought to experience an object through a sense base, and that thought is followed by several other thoughts you create, either pursuing something to your liking or pursuing something to your dislike, thereby creating an attachment to aversion. It is a strong habit in you, and invariably your ordinary life, you constantly feed the desire by these means, falling into one of two extremes of either promoting attachment or promoting aversion. It is in your life now. It's rather difficult for you to get rid of this because it is a very, very strong habit in your mind now. And these are the two extremes, aversion and attachment, that promote desire. I have already emphasized in earlier discourses given to you that this subsequent creation of thoughts and promoting desire or promoting aversion are not the normal function of the mind. Normal function of the mind is to create the thought enable you to experience a sense-based activity. And beyond that, if what you are used to get done, used to doing, you have created that habit in you to pursue the like and to dislike what you do not like. This is the worldly life. This is how a worldling spends his time in making use of his six sense bases. This is a natural outcome as a result of the development of desire in him. Desire is not the quality of the mind. It is something which you have created in the mind. When you create something in the mind, you have to promote it constantly to maintain that creation. If you do not maintain the creation, the natural tendency is for that quality which you have introduced into the mind to disappear. It's like any other habit. If you create a habit, if you want to maintain the habit, you have to pursue that habit by constantly doing something in support of the habit. If you do not commit any acts to support the habit naturally wears away. The so-called desire is so strong in your mind, and that naturally drives you to perform the two other acts of either creating subsequent thoughts of attachment or subsequent thoughts of aversion. These thoughts are absolutely not necessary. They are your creation. What you are expected to create is a spontaneous creation of a thought to enable you to hear or smell or taste or contact or think. It stops at that. One clear example I can quote from scriptures about this position is that one Mahāyā, a very, very advanced Brahmin who had practiced philosophy or meditation for a long time, he was under the impression that he has attained Buddhahood. And he was living in a jungle wearing barks of trees. Buddha, on his way around for alms, visited that village close by. And the deity who was living in a tree close by reminded Mahāyā, "You think that you have attained Buddhahood, but there is Buddha coming to a village close by on his round for alms. Go and meet him and listen to a discourse delivered by him." Mahāyā immediately got up and went in search of Buddha. He met Buddha on the road and he appealed to Buddha to deliver a discourse to him. Buddha replied that is not the hour because he is on his rounds for alms. Second time also Buddha refused. On the third occasion he appealed to him and Buddha acceded to that request. In brief, Buddha said, "Mahāyā, you only see and see only. You only hear and hear only. You smell and smell only. And in like manner, you use the sense basis only and do not do anything further than that." And Mahāyā understood what Buddha advised him to do and he attained his arahat. What did Buddha advise Mahāyā to do? After seeing something with the eyes, don't go pursue that object further. After listening something with your ears, don't pursue that object further. After smelling with the nose, don't pursue that object further. After experiencing a taste, don't pursue that object further. After experiencing a contact, don't pursue that further. Create a thought and that is it. The further activity that Buddha asked Mahāyā not to perform is the creation of thoughts about the object when it is to your liking. Such thoughts promote attachment. If the object is not to your liking, not to create thoughts of dislike, which promotes aversion. And it is aversion and attachment that promote desire. Mahāyā understood what Buddha told him. And he had that developed mindfulness in him to restrict his activities in regard to the six sense bases only to the performance of that activity and not to create unnecessary thoughts subsequently in pursuit of what is good and in pursuit of what is bad. He stopped at that. And on many occasions Buddha has given his advice to others too. That is what we mean by silence in the mind. Not that we can stop the mind from creating a thought to experience something which a sense base has received. That that object, once the sense base receives that object or confronts itself to it, the natural reaction in the mind is a creation of a thought. But that creation of a thought is a spontaneous activity. That creation of a thought has in no way promoted the desire. It just only made you to perform the act of the sense base in the way of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, contacting and thinking, that's all. Well, if that is done, there is no harm done to yourself, because there is no promotion of desire. As I always emphasize, desire has to be maintained by thoughts of aversion or attachment. These are the two extremes that maintain the desire. And when do you create thoughts of aversion or attachment? After every experience you gain through a sense-based activity, you create thoughts, further thoughts of attachment or further thoughts creating aversion. These two extremes which you fall into as a habit promotes the desire in you. This is something which we have to be very careful about. And the only answer is mindfulness. We come to that later. Buddha never directly told or advised, except in his preaching to Bahya and Malukaputta Tissa also, he refers to a similar preaching, the silencing of the mind. When we speak of silence in the mind, some people think it is to keep the mind completely silent, even to keep away the spontaneous activity of the mind in creating thoughts to experience sense objects. No. That is an activity of the mind which cannot be stopped or checked. So long as you keep the sense bases open, there is always a reception of sense objects. But what you are advised to do is, don't create unnecessary thinking by after experience an object. If you ever think about the object, either it must be to promote the liking of to the object or promote an aversion to the object. These are the two extremes one falls into. And that is done by you for the purpose of feeding the desire, maintaining the desire. Now in the scriptures, in the four foundations of mindfulness, if there are any reference to maintain the mind silent, four foundations of mindfulness deals with the body, with feelings, with thoughts and the development of Dhamma. Those are the four subjects it deals with. In regard to the body, we developed the realistic view about the body in analyzing the parts of the body and realizing for ourselves clearly through meditation that these parts of the body are all impure. In other words, the body is a mass of impurities and nothing else. Why is the meditation on the body done? We have lived in the past with the body and the mind together, associating with each other very closely. Further, the mind has an attachment to the body, so attached that it's always together. The difficulty in promoting concentration in your mind is to keep away the random thoughts that disturb you. What are these random thoughts? Random thoughts are the creation of attachment to aversion. When you sit quietly to develop your concentration, well, you have, as far as possible, a control over the sense bases. Your eyes are closed and you are well concentrated at one spot and not permitting the mind to accept thoughts or create thoughts of promoting sense-based activities. But your past experience always rushes to you. What are the experience that rushes to you? Experience of enjoyment of an activity of a sense base, or the impression created in your mind about the aversion you created towards an activity of a sense base. Thoughts of aversion and attachment are the two kinds of thoughts that very often disturb you in your concentration. Therefore, to avoid these two incidents disturbing you, what we practice is, first, the meditation on the impurities of the body. Thereby we educate the mind that this body is not an object for one to get attached to. Though its appearances, outside appearance, has impressed you as something wholesome, something good, something attractive to the experiences gained by the six sense bases, But if you analyze this body carefully, it is one mass of impurities and nothing else. That education of the mind keeps the mind away from the body. It tends to lose the grasp it had over the body in the way of that attachment towards the body, and thereby reduce thoughts which promote attachment. In regard to aversion, we practiced loving kindness to all beings. That reduces to a great extent unnecessary creation of thoughts of aversion. These two meditations we practice prior to developing concentration, so that the mind will be at peace, so to say. If you clearly practice these two meditations prior to your concentration of the mind at one point, we thereby comply with the first foundation of mindfulness in the way of meditating on the body. Then there are two other subjects referred to in the mind, in the four foundations of mindfulness, that is, mindfulness about feelings you create, mindfulness about thoughts you create. If you carefully analyze these two subjects, you can clearly see that both these subjects are promoted in order to maintain silence in the mind. When thoughts or feelings occur, you consider them as impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless and dispose of those feelings. In regard to thoughts that occur too, you, in the first instance, you are careful that your mind is free from all hindrances. And in the hindrances are, the first two subjects are attachment and aversion. You keep the mind silent. In the actual practice of mindfulness in feelings and mindfulness of the creation of thoughts, what you actually do is dispose of these thoughts that promote the feelings. Dispose the thought that disturbs your peace of mind and keep the mind silent. That is what you are doing in these two, in these two subjects of mindfulness. Second foundation of mindfulness and third foundation of mindfulness deals with feelings and thoughts, and you dispose of these things. Of course, there you dispose of these things by the use of the realities of life, that is, impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things, and the soullessness. We directly deal with these two in the same manner. After we deal with the body, and when you have developed your mind to a clear state of understanding the basic impurities and the way how one should get rid of them, that is, prior to the attainment, entering of the stream entry, there are three fetters that one should dispose of. The first fetter is sakkāya diṭṭhi, that is, pertaining to the existence of being in you, the belief, personality belief in you. You dispose of that personality belief in you by analyzing every activity of yours as mind and matter, that there is no person as such committing these acts, but you observe the thought being created and thereby directing the body to perform certain activities. This you clearly observe, and thereby convince yourself that there is no person as such who is committing these activities except the mind directing the body. This view is further supported by the fact that you analyze every activity of yours as cause and effect. That is, a cause and effect is there. These two exercises enables you to give up this personality view about person being in you who commits all the activities. And you are now convinced that there is no such person created around your personality, but there is the rising and passing away of all activities, and all activities are causally created. And also you find that there is no person as such who is committing these except the mind and the body reacting to each other. Then of course, the other two fetters one has to get rid of will be doubt and the practice of unnecessary cults which you are used to. That automatically, you overcome that automatically at the time of the attainment. Therefore, the maturity that should be reached by a person after we get rid of this personality belief, it's the maturity in the impermanence, and he is made to practice impermanence. in all activities around him. And once that knowledge of impermanence has reached a height required for the purpose of the first entry into the stream, then of course his mind develops to that stage of fruition samadhi and he realizes that. After he has entered the stream as a stream enterer, then the two other fetters that he has to overcome of the five lower fetters is attachment and aversion. These are powerful fetters which keep you tied to the worldly way, attachment and aversion. The difficulty in overcoming these two fetters completely have been clearly indicated by the two stages of attainment of one's returner and non-returner. At the stage of the attainment of one's returner, you clear half the defilements created by these two, aversion and attachment. And you completely overcome aversion and attachment at the time you reach the third stage of development, that is non-returner. So you can visualize how deep these two fetters are functioning in your normal worldly life. That is why the giving up of these two fetters take place at two levels of development of the mind, once returner and non-returner. Attachment and aversion, as I told you, promote desire. And I have already explained to you that desire is maintained by these two things, attachment and aversion, which are created in your mind subsequent to your creation of a thought spontaneously to experience an occurrence in the sense base, an object in the sense base, that is attractive sense base. Is after that thought has been created, you subject yourself to the creation of thoughts of attachment and aversion. And that is a strong habit created in you. In the spontaneous activity of the mind in the creation of a thought, there is no desire. Desire is a subsequent creation by you as a result of creating thoughts of aversion or thoughts of attachment. And it is these thoughts that maintains the two defilements, two fetters of attachment and aversion, which are functioning to tie you down to the worldly life. These are the two bindings, very strong bindings, which keep you to the worldly way of life. Now what we expect to do is, after you have entered the stream, we instruct the yogis, devotees, be mindful. It's more than mindfulness, be in mindful awareness of what? Awareness of not to permit thoughts to occur in your mind after you have received the sense-based activity. After you have committed the sense-based activity, live in full awareness, mindful awareness, not permitting any experience you gain through a sense-base as a result of a spontaneous creation of a thought, not to permit other thoughts, unnecessary thoughts to occur, promoting within you the liking to that object or promoting within you the dislike to that object. How do you do that? That, of course, you are constantly aware of the realities of life, of impermanence, unsatisfactory nature of things, and the soullessness. Especially impermanence, you are always aware. So whenever you receive an object through a sense base, and after creating a spontaneous thought about it, then you refer to the object that has attracted the sense base as something impermanent. There's nothing further to follow in that. Impermanent is impermanent. Therefore, this constant awareness of impermanence, which you must maintain in your mindfulness, will help you to stop the creation of further thoughts. Some people think of stopping such thoughts by concentrating at the point where the thought arises. You normally get a feeling like that in the mind, that this is the place where thought arises. And you go on concentrating at that point, not permitting thoughts to occur. That is wrong. What you are doing there is promoting concentration. If you develop your concentration, you may be in one of the transcendent states of mind, thereby always catching an object and living in that object, not giving the free chance of the mind to create thoughts as it is used to. And some people, by doing that for half an hour or 1 hour, they have made the mind silent. No. They have only given an object to the mind to hang on, so to say. And you maintain that, not permitting other thoughts to occur. Thereby you are not silenced in the mind. If you want to keep the mind silent, you must live only in awareness of what is happening within you. And that is mindful awareness. So anything occurring in the mind in the way of creation of thoughts, you are aware. And it is at that stage you interfere and dispose of that thought. Impermanent. And the object is impermanent, therefore the thought does get dispelled. Don't practice concentration when you are practicing to keep the mind silent. Live in only awareness, mindful awareness of what is happening. So as the thought arises, you deal with that subject of the thought as something impermanent. Impermanent. You don't pursue what is impermanent as something to your liking or not to your liking. It's impermanent. That is the approach you must make in maintaining your silence. Not to fix the mind at one point and go on watching that point. Thereby you are only promoting concentration. When you develop concentration, that mind has no capacity to accept anything or allow anything to develop in that mind. You have fixed the mind at one point on a certain subject. But if you live in awareness, mindful awareness, there is a full freedom of the mind to create anything it wishes to create. But you are aware that there is a creation like that taking place and you take subsequent action to see that that is removed. How? By reminding the mind that that object is impermanent. It is of no value. Therefore there is no necessity for one to get attached to that object or to create an aversion of that object. Live in full awareness. And what are you doing there? You are functioning or performing a task quite opposite to what you used to in the past. In the past you experienced an object through a sense base and you promoted feelings of attachment or aversion by creating thoughts. You promoted it. Now what you are doing is you experience a sense object through a sense base and you live in awareness after that. Full awareness, mindful awareness. And when a thought arises either of attachment or promoting aversion, you consider that object that has created that thought as impermanent. You attack the very root of the thought, impermanent. That object is impermanent. Therefore, naturally there is no urge for you to continue to create that thought further and further and further. It gets dispelled. You dispose of the thought. Why? You attach no value to that object that created the thought. That is how you practice silencing of the mind. Not by just fixing the mind at one point and watching the mind. No. Live in full awareness, mindful awareness of what is happening. And as a thought arises, you analyze the object of that thought as something impermanent. Impermanent, impermanent. Therefore, there is no necessity for you to pursue that thought further in creating thoughts of attachment to aversion. And when you go on attacking the consciousness in the creation of thoughts in this manner, not permitting the thoughts to occur and multiply, but obstructing every thought that occurs in criticizing or analyzing the object as something impermanent, then there is a discouragement for the consciousness to create thoughts. As time goes on, when you practice it carefully, you will find less and less thoughts occur in you. Because you are very watchful, you are waiting for a chance to attack any thought that arises, not the spontaneous activity of the mind, the creation of thoughts to experience something through a sense base, not those thoughts. Those thoughts cannot be stopped. The subsequent thoughts that are developed by you to promote aversion or attachment, these are the thoughts that you deal with. As a result, your mind is always silent. You hear something, that is all. That's impermanent. No more promotion of thoughts of either creating attachment to aversion in regard to any sense object. And what happens is you begin to keep the mind silent, silent, silent. I have always emphasized the promotion of thoughts of aversion and attachment that keeps the desire firm in your mind. If there is a weakness in the production of the thoughts of aversion or attachment, there is a weakness in the maintenance of the desire. Desire also becomes weak. It's like to give a very, very, so to say, rough example for you to have an idea about it. there is a drunkard. He is in the habit of drinking morning, noon, night, ever drunk. He has continued this life for a long time. Just say 30, 40 years, he ultimately realizes that he is wasting money. His family is also now disrupted as a result of this bad habit. And he has made all the members of the family to suffer as a result of this activity. And finally he thinks, I must give up this habit. By pursuing this habit, I am creating misery in others. And he makes up his mind, from tomorrow I shall not drink. And he pursues that decision he has taken. First week he did not drink, second week he did not drink, third week he did not drink, fourth week he did not drink, fifth week he did not drink. What has happened to his habit? It's not so powerful as it was in the first week. Second week it's not so powerful as it was in the first week. Third week not so powerful as it was in the second week. And little by little, you find this habit wears away from the mind. It disappears from the mind. When you only promote the thing and go on doing that as often as possible, then that mind creates that strong habit. And that habit completely controls you. In this manner, if you are careful, mindfully aware of what is happening and don't permit any unnecessary thinking to be done after you experience something through a sense base, by the creation of a spontaneous thought, you are attacking any other thought that arises in regard to that subject by analyzing that thought as impermanent, object as impermanent, the object that creates the thought as impermanent, 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 impermanent. When you are aware like that, and you conduct yourself in this full awareness, analyzing these subsequent creation of thoughts as impermanent, unsatisfactory, and soulless, then there will be a natural reduction of the creation of thoughts in your mind. And ultimately, in the way of creation of thoughts of attachment to aversion, you are silent. Because immediately what comes out when you see something, impermanence, that's impermanent. When you hear something, that too is impermanent. When you smell something, that too is impermanent. When you taste something, that too is impermanent. When you contact something, that too is impermanent. And even a thought when it arises, that too is impermanent. Therefore, awareness of the impermanence and mindfulness of this impermanence, you live in that condition of mind, you completely bring the mind to a very, very silent state. You see only and nothing more, because you are fully aware of what you see is impermanent. You hear only and nothing more, because you know that what you heard is impermanent. You smell something and that is all. No more creation of thoughts of attachment or aversion, because that is impermanent. In this manner, you will only permit your mind to create thoughts to perform the activity of the sixth sense basis, which in no way promote desire. And what happens to desire? Desire, the strength of the desire will get reduced like the drunkard. At the early stages of giving up liquor, it was very strong in him. But he resisted that. And as time goes on, days, weeks after, you find that that resistance is not so powerful. And he overcame that completely and completely dispelled the desire that has been created in his mind of taking liquor regularly, daily. In the same manner, you also will reduce that. When the desire, the strength of the desire is reduced day by day, being watchful of what you are doing, not promoting desire, then what happens is, the promotion of desire, the activities of creating thoughts of attachment and aversion also get reduced accordingly. And little by little, it disappears. Along with the disappearance of thoughts of attachment to aversion, because you are mindful always of impermanence, then what happens is, desire naturally get reduced. When desire get reduced half by half, then you reach the stage of once returner. And when desire is completely dispelled out of your mind, you reach the stage of non-return. With the attainment of the third stage of non-returner, you have completely stopped future births in the world. Your births were controlled by desire. No longer there is desire in you now. As a result, you are qualified to be born in the pure abodes. The birth in the pure abodes are not created by karma. Is an automatic birth, because you have got rid of desire and there is no part played by desire in such births. In the pure abodes, you purify your mind further, get into the false views, and ultimately realize the truth in the way of the attainment of Nibbana. If one continues to exist after one has realized the third stage of non-returner, in the four foundations of mindfulness, Buddha has clearly explained the meditation one should conduct to develop himself to reach the stage of arahathood. That's the final liberation. In the first instance, he says, analyze the mind carefully so that you are satisfied that you are free from all hindrances. There are five hindrances which no worldling is subjected to. Now that you have got rid of desire by attaining the third stage, such conduct no longer exists in you. Your mind is now tuned to develop itself to a higher level of understanding and realization. Therefore, you clear your mind of any hindrance which occurs in you, and after that you are expected to develop your concentration, your meditation, complete on the five grasping groups. One would ask the question, five grasping groups have been termed as the Sakkaya Ditti. Well, the definition of Sakkaya Ditti is five grasping groups. In getting rid of Sakkaya Ditti, that is, the false belief one has created in one's mind of a being present in him, by purely analyzing your activities as mind and matter. In that analysis, in that careful watching of what you are committing, you begin to see that every act you commit by the body is directed by the mind. Or it's the thought that is first created in you, which ultimately leads to the commission of the act. And this is further proved by analyzing every activity as cause and effect. And once you have completed the meditation on these two aspects, mind and matter, and cause and effect, you will be thoroughly convinced that there is no being in you. But isn't it the gross aspect of this false belief of a being in you that you have got rid of? Built around your body, personality, and analyzing your activities carefully, you have realized that it is a thought that directs the body to commit acts. And also in analyzing activities further as cause and effect, that aspect is convincing to you now. What you have got rid of there is the gross aspect of being present in you, you have got rid of. But there still remains something in depth in your mind, and that is the creation of I and mind. That is called the ego. Ego is the subtle aspect of the personality that you have created and which you have got rid of. And that subtle aspect is that in every thought you create, the author is yourself, the I. And ego is nothing but a bundle of thoughts. To dispel that clearly, Buddha has advised us to analyze the five grasping groups as impermanent, unsatisfactory and soulless. You dwell yourself on that meditation and ultimately realize that the five grasping groups itself is a delusion created by the mind, and there is no substance in that. And once you are thoroughly convinced with that aspect of the creation of the five grasping groups, then Buddha directs you to analyze the creation of thoughts. Thoughts are created at six places, that is, in connection with the eye, in connection with the ear, in connection with the nose, in connection with the tongue, in connection with the body, and in connection with the mind. Those are the six places where thoughts are created. You analyze how a thought is created in connection with the eye as cause and effect. You go through every step from the very beginning, from the time the eye has met with the visual object, up to the time the thought has been created as a result of the activity of the five mental factors. You dwell on your meditation in regard to thoughts created connected with your eye, connected with your ear, connected with your nose, connected with your tongue, connected with your body, and connected with your thinking. And once you have fully realized that thoughts are created as a result of cause and effect and nothing else, then you are convinced that there is no person as I in you who is created as a result of the constant creation of thoughts. The ego is supposed to be a bundle of thoughts. When you go on creating thoughts one after the other, connected with the six sense bases, there naturally arises an author to the creation, and that is the I. And you go on analyzing these thoughts carefully as cause and effect, you find this false picture created in your mind that there is someone in authority to create these thoughts, that is I, it disappears. And that you must be thoroughly convinced. You should go through this analysis carefully. If still I exists in you, you are expected to pursue this meditation on the six bases where thoughts are created as cause and effect. In the past, we have always, with the Sakkayaditti creating a wrong impression in you that there is a being in you, you gave the personality a place, and that is, your person is the authority who creates this activity. But once you have got rid of that, then the subtle aspect of that is the I, where thoughts are created, and you give the authorship of these thoughts to the I that is created in your mind. And that is created as a result of constant thought being created one after the other continuously. And the continuous creation of thoughts creates the I in you. That is why ego is supposed to be called the bundle of thoughts and nothing else. And the analysis of the six thoughts that are created in your mind in respect to the six sense bases, you will see that you will be thoroughly convinced that there is no person as such or the I who is supposed to be the author of the creation of these thoughts. Now your mind is free of the I, the ego, and also the possessor mind. Possessor arises as a result of the existence of the I. Once you have got rid of the I, the ego, mind disappears along with that. Now comes the most important aspect, that is, you still possess the mind. You still think mind is a continuing process that is going on. You have made use of this power to get rid of most of the defilements. You have analyzed yourself carefully and reached the stage when there is only the mind left now. All the other defilements which you have created as a result of wrong experience you have gained and wrong conclusions you have arrived at, all those you have overcome. And it is this so-called mind is the thing that one has to ultimately deal with. Buddha, after you have got rid of the I and mind, it directs you to practice the seven factors of enlightenment. Seven factors of enlightenment are 4, mindfulness, 1, 2, probing into various aspects of Dhamma, 3, surging of energy, physical and mental, 5, feeling of cheer and happiness, 6, weightlessness in the body and mind, 6, development of Samadhi in you, and that is inside Samadhi, and the 7th is developing a state of tranquility in your mind. You see carefully, when you analyze the different steps you have taken from the four ways of mindfulness, practicing that, and in that practice you have analyzed everything as impermanent, that has led you to clearly identify the Dhamma, to analyze the Dhamma, through the insight knowledge you have gained, through the wisdom you have developed so far, and that has given you much built up energy in you. You are quite convinced that you are on the right path. And there is a surge of energy in you, mental and physical. And that leads you to complete satisfaction. You are very, very happy. You are light-hearted. Why? Because you see the true nature of Dhamma before you. And that leads you to the development of Samadhi in you. And that Samadhi, the development of mind in insight knowledge, which will ultimately lead you to a state of tranquility in the mind. What is this tranquility which you would experience at that stage? Your mind is very, very peaceful.
It catches no objects. You see the mental state in a peaceful condition, like something which is very clean, no stains on it, and it is there. It's nothing but the mental energy developed to that height. And in that condition, you can analyze the mind, you can clearly see what is happening in you with this mental energy present in yourself. Mind and body have been together from the very inception of your existence in the samsara, the cycle of birth. At a certain stage, the development in you, you got rid of the body. You analyze the body and release the mind from the hold the body had over the mind. And now you have drilled the mind, cleansed the mind of all the impurities, and ultimately reached that state of enlightenment where the mind is in a very tranquil state. We have to accept, brothers and sisters, that mind and body are equipment meant for the continuity in the cycle of births in the world. Now we have got rid of the body. Now it's a question where we have to deal with the mind which we possess. In this tranquil state of the mind, you begin to analyze the mind as impermanent, unsatisfactory, and soulless. You will see that energy, mental energy, rises to a very high state. It transcends to a state of mind when it is completely pure. It will shine like a bright gem, because the mind is now completely free of all defilement. That too you analyze further and say, this too is impermanent, impermanent, impermanent. And then this lustre gets reduced little by little, little by little, and the mind will disappear, brothers and sisters. That is a state where you enter the void. There is no thinking there. There is no sense of time or space there. You are in the void. One would ask the question, is the devotee aware that he is in the void? Yes. As he gets into the void, he is aware that he is in the void. And mind has already disappeared. You have realized ultimately that the mind is also nothing but a cause and effect that has been maintained by you as a result of thinking, objects being supplied. Now the mental energy is there in you, but it is completely free of any objects. And that mental energy also reaches the stage when it is not developing any thoughts at all. And ultimately, that energy, mental energy, by itself is developed to a state when you realize that there is no body and mind in you, that everything is empty, that nothing that one can get out of the mind or the body, that emptiness prevails. And that is the state, brothers and sisters. You come to the conclusion that you have done what you should have done. You have finished your task and you have reached the full state of Nibbana. This is a gradual process, brothers and sisters. The four foundations of mindfulness taught by Buddha directly leads to this state of mind. And nothing more that you should do, that nothing more that you should search for, except to comply strictly with the four foundations of mindfulness pertaining to the body, pertaining to feelings, pertaining to thoughts, and finally getting rid of the false beliefs and false views you have created in the course of your existence in the early life, and cleanse the mind of all these defilements and bring it to a very, very pure stage. And there you see that too is also subject to impermanence, unsatisfactory nature, and also soulless. And in the realization of these three realities, finally you ultimately come to a state when you have completed your task and liberated yourself from this cycle of birth. Thank you.